Welcome to The Collective Voice, a podcast that amplifies issues affecting technical hiring. The Collective Voice is brought to you by eTechie, a technical interviews as a service platform which helps hiring teams focus resources on the most qualified people for IT roles. This episode kicks off a series on diversity and inclusion. My name is Amanda Cole. I'm the Vice President of eTechie, and in this podcast, I talk with Recruiting Daily President William Tencup on the topic of regionalism and recruiting. I'm so grateful you've tuned in to listen.
All right, hey, this is William Tencup, President of Recruiting Daily. And I have an amazing guest today, and we're going to talk about a fascinating topic that has many, many legs. And so without further ado, Amanda, if you'll do us the honor, please introduce yourself.
Sure. Thanks, William. I'm Amanda Cole. I guess Ryan would introduce me recently as a powerhouse over here at eTechie. I'm a little bit more humble than that. So I'll just say I'm part of the team here at eTechie, and I'm excited to be here and have a conversation with you today.
Absolutely. So the topic at its base is because Amanda, again, she's very humble. She's an expert technical recruiter. What it takes not only to find the talent, but to what you find the talent. What do you do with the talent? How do you interview them? How do you take them through the paces? How do you know what they've done, and how do you validate what they've done, and how do you make great tech hires? So when we first started talking about technical recruiting, kind of going down the paths of like, what could we explore? What would be fun? One of the things we thought of was regionalism. You know, how it is different in Austin, Texas, to Seattle, to Mumbai, to pick a place on the planet. And is it similar? Is it different? How's it done? How is it better? How's it worse? So we're going to start with the umbrella. And the umbrella that we want you to understand is, what is regionalism, you know, in tech recruiting? Is there such a thing? And if so, how does it play out? How do we think it plays out? What are some of the important saleable points and questions and answers that we need to go through? So, you know, Amanda, let's just start with like the basics, regionalism and tech recruiting. What's your take on that?
So regionalism, I guess you could be very literal and make it about your geography, right? But I think that when it comes to regionalism, that, you know, it also has to do with your contact sphere. That, you know, you think about those that you have a close relationship. So I think what we're talking about today, just kind of at that high level geographic, is going to apply as the conversation kind of unfolds today. So as it applies to recruiting, it's looking in your own backyard, right? Mm-hmm. And having that eligibility requirement that, you know, this is not a position that could be remote. This is a position where likely they're going to need to come into the office, and that you want to recruit someone locally because maybe you don't have the funds to relocate the right talent.
Right. It's funny, earlier in the week we talked about kind of cultural norms. And one of the questions that I asked a person was, you know, what's the difference between tech recruiting in Silicon Valley and Hyderabad? And the gentleman he's like, well, it's hard in Silicon Valley, but it's, believe it or not, it's a smaller community than you expect. Like, everyone kind of knows the path, where someone has been, you know, right? Somebody that's been there, and they can kind of track back where you came in, who you've worked for, what projects you've done, and you still got to go through all the vetting. But you can kind of map back to kind of some of the things they've done. Because in India, it's not like that. You know, you have people that will tell you that they've done something, and you'll really have a great way of really kind of figuring out if they've done that. And then we kind of talked about LinkedIn and like, well, everyone lies on LinkedIn.
They do. They do. But so, there are some things about your LinkedIn profile that will let you know if someone is lying.
That's right. So it's like, if some of it might not be as sinister as we think it is. Like when we say lying, it's such loaded words, like, oh, lying, oh my God, that's bad.
Embellishments.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Bloated.
I
don't have to go straight to fake.
Right. Fraud. You know, automatically go right to Fraudville. I was thinking more of like how one thinks really, really positively about themselves. And maybe they think more positively about what they did and how they contributed than they really did.
Well, that's what the reference check is for, right?
One was,
but before you get to that, you know, in terms of predictive validity, you know, you look at the behavioral-based framework of interviewing and using that as a tactic to make sure that there's enough detail behind someone's story that helps you to have certainty and confidence that the project that's on their resume, you know, actually they were as in-depth and hands-on as they claim to be.
Right. It's interesting. I in my mind, and this was much later after the conversation, but in my mind, I was thinking about the concept of bribery. And how in certain parts of the world, bribery is normal. Like, you know, here it isn't as much. Although I will give the audience a quick tip. There is a cash discount on almost anything you do in the service industry.
Hmm.
So if you have the cable person come over and they're like, oh, I can't do the thing about the thing. And, you know, you can literally say, if I were paying cash, I have some cash, but if I paid cash, you'll find in most of those instances, not all, but in most of those instances, that the cash price changes some of the dynamic I'm not saying bribes. However, I've noticed that when I've had like refrigerators installed and taken away that, you know, that there's a cash price to some of those things that just kind of makes things a little easier.
Cash is queen?
Yeah, cash is queen. But, you know, the idea of bribery in certain countries is not just normal, it's accepted. It's a part of doing business. And so I also thought of, like, well, embellishment, not the sinister Fraudville, but just embellishment might also be cultural. There might also be some cultural aspects to it. But with your point of, okay, it could be cultural or not cultural, getting down to the root of what did you do? What do you know? And confirming, you know, without any bias, confirming those things.
So I'm gonna circle back around there. It may not be that it's cultural. Embellishment. I think has some ATSs have some blame to take here.
Mm.
The applicant tracking system is designed to funnel out all the resumes that are not applicable, that the recruiter and give the recruiter what they should focus on. But candidates are trying to game the ATS and pack as much into that resume as they possibly can make logically fit in order to get through the tech to the human. Have you considered that before?
I like that. To be able to get to the human, you get to, again, what they've done in tangible terms. Because that's you've got to like versus like. You've got to compare the apples to apples in order to make a great hiring decision. It, you know, you can't be comparing unlike items. So you're right. Yeah, I can see that. It is kind of a game of the funnel set up to knock out, not necessarily to include in.
Well, and you know, we may have kind of jumped ahead here and talked about one of the challenges of kind of breaking free from regionalism. Mm-hmm. But, you know, definitely when you are talking about how do we look at our eligibility requirements and go beyond looking within our geographic region, how do we do that and how do we screen in a manner that is going to provide us a better hiring outcome.
Right.
While also breaking free of the laziness, mm-hmm. if I could use the word, of depending on knowing where someone claims to have worked previously and assuming that their hands-on work will suit the work that needs to be done at the company that you're hiring them for.
Right. Well, let me ask a loaded question. Do you think regionalism is code for bias?
It depends on what your goals are as a company. If your goals as a company are to serve a regional population and you need a mindset of employees that think like your users, we'll put on the tech hat here for a minute. If you're providing technology for a specific region, then it makes sense to have your technology team represent your region.
Right.
If you're designing technology and delivering services nationally, globally, then yes, if you just recruit regionally, mm-hmm. you're going to put bias into your technology.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about here in Dallas, SMU has a wonderful computer science program. But outside of that, there isn't, even though there's a lot of colleges here, it's really the best one. Hmm. And so if you're hiring technical talent here in Dallas, you'd probably look for someone that went to SMU or had ties to SMU in some ways. And so, again, to your point, you know, there's a bias there, but I also think you nailed it on, you know, represent a population that's representative of who you're serving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you're serving kind of a, let's just say in that instance, a Texas audience, or even a more hyper-local North Texas audience, then a degree from SMU makes sense. On one level, the capabilities, we're still, you know, we haven't even gotten the capabilities. We're just dealing with some of the stuff that's outside of the capabilities.
Yeah, more of that surface level.
Mm-hmm. How we knock people in, knock them out. I wanted to ask a question about desperation. And does this change regionally with talent and talent pools? Do we, you know, let's take Seattle. You know, it's a hiring kind of a mecca. It's hard to find technical talent. So Silicon Valley, Manhattan, mm-hmm, there's certain mm-hmm. places in Austin actually is
a hard to find
technical talent. Do you think that desperation and regionalism, do you think that leads to kind of lesser expectations?
Desperation for what? To fill a role?
To fill a role. And I'll tell you where the idea comes from.
Okay.
And it might help with context. So like salespeople, every day you don't have that salesperson, you lose the ability to have those sales, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a cost to every day that position's open. There's an actual opportunity cost there.
Yeah.
With people that code, there's also an opportunity cost. For every
technical debt is technical, what I like technical, to
right.
Yeah.
There's and so every day you lost 7,000 lines of code for every day that person wasn't in the job. And I'm dealing with like areas where it's hyper hard to find talent.
Yeah. So from my perspective, it's more about, are you gonna settle for less than than the criteria? You're going to settle for less in terms of skill qualifications just to fit the hiring from that region just because you don't have a budget to move someone, just because you don't know how to facilitate a remote working relationship that has trust? Or are you going to pivot? Are you going to look at the data and make a decision that I need to switch up my requirements a little bit? I need to look past my region. I need to look for someone who can start day one on the job performing at, you know, 90 to 100% versus 50 to 60.
I think that's that tracks for me because especially as it relates to values. You know, you can go, you can suffer on some things, but if you hire someone out of desperation, essentially, because you're trying to fill that technical debt or minimize the technical debt, and that person is outside your values, then you're going to create, you're literally creating another problem.
Yeah.
By letting that person in, because it's just going to, it's going to surface no matter what. The alignment with values, you know, it's like capabilities. Critical. Cultural fit, however one defines that, okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One would say critical, important, whatever. But alignment with values, if we're not aligned values-wise, all that other stuff kind of fades. It falls down.
Agreed. But wouldn't you call those critical items that you just mentioned more about the suitability of mm-hmm. a candidate versus an eligibility?
Yeah.
So tweak your eligible factors.
Right.
Stay hard and fast on suitable.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, going back to bias, once you've had exposure to someone who didn't meet your original eligibility requirements, but hits it right on the head when it comes to suitability, your eyes become open and you no longer have that fear of I have to recruit in this region.
Right. And by doing so, you start opening up all kinds of different ideas, as you said, virtual work, telework, you know, team-based things that working from anywhere, working, mm-hmm. letting the outcomes become more or less the game and not how one gets to the outcomes. It's what's interesting about that to me is that's a management thing, you know,
it is.
Right? It is. Like, do you have to see the person every day?
Do you trust mm-hmm. that person? Do you trust that your project plans will drive the outcome that they're supposed to have so that if that hire follows the project plan to the T, uses those collaboration tools, gets on Hangouts or Skype and communicates with the team regularly. You know, I think this whole collaborative work environment where you can get in and work on the same projects simultaneously and see one another in those tools working, you know, that's gotta come from the top, that we're willing to let systems provide transparency of who's doing what when, that then generate that trust and that level of accountability that has to be there, that everybody's going to get it together and meet the deadline and make the client happy.
And again, I think some of that gets back to, you know, suitability and the values mm-hmm. of leadership and management that basically can let go and say, listen, here's the outcome. Here's how we're going to get to the outcome, you know, and we have to communicate. We can do that in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you about good examples and bad examples of regionalism and tech recruiting. Can you think of any that are either of those?
Good examples or bad examples of regionalism? I don't know. I put out a blog a while back on a list of various biases that we have inherently. And those inherent biases, one of them was kind of depending on where someone else has worked mm-hmm. versus kind of confirming yourself, doing the reference check, having the conversations about what they've done and what the outcomes were. You know, another one is universities, the one that you brought up with SMU.
Mm-hmm.
The others deal with going back to, you know, it can go back to race. It can go back mm-hmm. to gender,
mm-hmm.
right? So the experiences that you've had with someone who's from another culture that were negative in the past, you've stereotyped that every work or personal instance with someone from that culture or someone from that race is going to be the same.
Right, right. Do you, and again, loaded question, do you think regionalism and how it relates to tech recruiting, do you see that, or have you seen that from a perspective of the old boys club?
Yeah. I mean, it's actually, you know, to pull back the curtain and be transparent, the eTechy advisory team, we have mm-hmm. one female and the rest white or Indian males.
Mm-hmm.
And we are being transparent and we are putting together our recruiting plan for the coming year and mm-hmm. how our advisors are going to become more diverse.
Yeah, that gets to your point of, we've talked about, we've a bunch of times, regional representative population.
Versus, right? We serve a global technical recruiting community.
Right.
And so our advising team, as well as our staff, need to be representative of that user population. And so we're going to do something about it.
Right. Well, and it's good. First of all, that's values again, kind of driving some of this. It's good that you know it. It's good that you're reflective. It's also good that you're transparent. Because it's a part of this, you're kind of like, hey, listen, we recognize we have a problem here. And we also recognize that we can fix it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So let's start taking the steps to fix it. And again, get to the goal of more representative population who we serve. You know, let's say it's 50-50 male, female. Well, we need to be closer to that than not.
Right.
If that's the case.
I mean, if you think back, William, you know, the Me Too mm-hmm. movement mm-hmm. and, you know, all of the headlines that have come from Silicon Valley, you know, what do you think, regionalism played any part in the lack of female software engineers and leaders in those companies?
I think it was all bias that drove some of that, that it's a like me bias, which is a very mm-hmm. popular bias in hiring. That I went to Stanford. I have a computer science undergrad and a mathematics master's. And Bob did the same thing. So Bob's like me. So how can Bob be a bad guy? So, you know, that
you
like
know.
Me. Bias,
mm-hmm.
I think, got us to a place where it was homogeny.
And part of what I truly believe, and this is me speaking here, is that the screening process
mm-hmm.
in IT departments today primarily is driven by a technical interview panel.
Mm-hmm.
And technical interview panels mostly have an odd number of individuals who sit on them mm-hmm. so that somebody's vote, you know, breaks the tie.
Right, right.
But these technical interview panels, how can they get away from, well, this candidate walks like me, talks like me, thinks mm-hmm. like me.
Trying.
I think they'll be fun to work with.
Yep.
Hello.
Yeah.
We're, and we we're wonder gonna, why D&I in tech companies and in IT departments is such a huge issue that's being discussed right now.
Well, I don't think we arrived here by accident. I don't think, you know what I mean? Like, I don't.
Yeah.
It didn't shock me when we heard stories about Hollywood and people in power abusing power, said power, for some type of gain, sexual gain, etc. Or people in Wall Street, ton of money, and again, same thing, mostly men, and using power and authority to subjugate, if you will, and garner some type of, in a power relationship, garner some type of sexual outcome. The technical issues in Silicon Valley, not the funding issues, because the funding issues, I think it's the same thing. Yeah. I actually think that the VCs and the private equity and all the people with money in Silicon Valley, I think there's no different than Wall Street and Hollywood. They basically get to a point where there's so much money that they could feel like they could do anything. It's a godlike complex, and if bad things then happen. Got it. Mm-hmm. Technical hiring, I think there is no shock to me, because there was very few women at the beginning, mostly men, like a lot of industries, and you can track it back to World War II, if you want to, and you can kind of come forward, and males just prefer to hire males, which is wrong on every level. There's no way to make that right. It's just wrong. And I think that it's still going on mm-hmm. in droves.
And if I may, it wasn't even that that those were the individuals that were employed mm-hmm. In tech first. Even the women who were employed in tech first,
yep.
men got credit for what they've done.
That's right.
What was
That's
that?
Right. The about NASA. Yeah.
NASA. The female team that got NASA to the moon.
Yeah. And of course, that's 50 years later, we can tell that story.
Right.
Which of course is shameful. All men, carry around this burden of even the good men, which, there are some.
There are lots of them.
they carry this burden, because these stories, why did it take 50 years? Why did we allow, either through passive or otherwise, why did we allow these stories to be not told in the way they should have been? And again, it's men taking a stand. Women are already taking a stand. Women will take care of themselves. Men actually have to stand up and go, you know what? Sally's the best candidate. And in that room, when it's uncomfortable, when there's, four other men that are on the hiring panel, you gotta be that guy that says, yeah, I hear you. It will be easier if we hire Ted, because Ted's like us. But problem is Sally's better. We should be getting better. And not be thinking about, how it's going to be easier to hire Ted.
And once Sally's hired, mm-hmm. Sally be included in mm-hmm. all of the same team building mm-hmm. event, the mm-hmm. unofficial team building event.
That's exactly right. Okay? That's right. There's a bias. Right? There's a bias in all that stuff that's male centric. Let's go to the baseball game together. Let's go drinking.
Let's do our own fantasy football league.
Uh-huh. Yep. All those things exist, and are all. It's like the, we don't talk about poor communities anymore, as being black or white. Mm-hmm. Because it's taboo. We basically say or you use code words.
Underserved.
It's underserved. It's an urban area. What is urban area? What does that mean? Is that a barrio? What is a ghetto? What are we actually saying when we say those words? I think those things happen mm-hmm. every day in the technical hiring world, on both the hiring, recruiters, sourcers. Mm-hmm. We've got fail there, because they're looking in talent pools where they can find people that they know that will go through. So we've got to change all the way back to sourcing and go look at groups where, there's high density of women in tech, or LGBTQ in tech, or, you know, slice inclusiveness in any way you like. But in tech, and go into those areas, source, bring those candidates out. So that we have a panel of candidates that looks like the panel of Americans, you know, that we would get. Right. Let's make them look similar. And then the best candidates should win. Meritocracy should prevail. The best candidates should win. And this is massive change in sourcing, recruiting, and hiring.
Right. Screening.
Screening. No. Yep.
Screening, great, and then
great
hiring.
Question. Great, yeah. Great question. Yeah. You've got to change.
I can't let that go.
No.
That's where my passion is.
Nor should you. Again, there's bias inherent in that system.
Right.
And we all have to recognize it on one level for it to change.
Right.
So.
And then when we do change it, we've recognized it before we can say, all right, this is it's not a one size fits all solution, is it?
Right. No, it is not.
It's multidimensional, just like diversity.
Yep. Yep.
I know it's cliche, but on a podcast, the best visual representation, and I'm a visual processor, so I got to say it. If you've never heard diversity is like an iceberg, that is the visual that you need to have when we talk about multi-dimensional issue and solutions, that there's so much more beneath what you see that you need to at times step away from and really say, how can we be more inclusive? Mm-hmm. How can we be more flexible on eligibility so that we get better candidates so that we aren't desperate?
That's right. I really like the way that you separated in regionalism, you separated suitability and eligibility. And suitability is something it's carved in stone. And eligibility is something written in pencil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have a
dream for a downloadable in the future.
Can't stop thinking like a marketer. Love
it. To help our listeners and our customers do this within their own recruiting. So exciting. More to come.
All right, more to come. You're just going to leave us hanging. That's what you're doing. You're teasing. You're teasing. No, that's fair. That's fair. That's
come back and hear us again.
So let's kind of sum up regionalism for folks that are listening. And again, the basis of tech recruiting is really the hiring that we care the most about right now, and how we can look inward, be a little bit more reflective potentially, and really look at the world in those eyes that you really set out, suitability and eligibility, and learn from that, and learn where we can be flexible and should be flexible, and where we really shouldn't be flexible. What's your parting words, advice that you would give the audience?
My parting words are, keep your user, your end customer, top of mind. Don't settle if the data points to pivoting on your eligibility factors. Suggest it to the hiring manager. Talk about the pros and cons and just try it. There's no hurt trying an experiment, right? And then finally, if you're part of a company that uses technical interview panels, examine that you are bringing as many diverse candidates into the pipeline to really help those IT team members have good choices when it comes time to make those offer decisions.
I love it. Parting shots for me is regionalism can be a good thing and can be a bad thing. And you have to really look at both suitability and eligibility in the ways that you've laid out for folks, that you've got to know when it's good, when it's bad.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of reflection There's a lot of looking inward and go, you know, what is our process? How do we go about this thing? And how do we go to the outcome that we want to, what is the outcome and how do we reach that outcome in hiring, in technical hiring in particular? Well, this has been fantastic.
I had fun.
Yeah, time flew by. This is fantastic. Well, thank the audience for listening. Again, this is William Tincup and Amanda Cole. So you can check us out. And thank you for the time. Thank you for allowing us to invade your ear hole, if you will. So there you go, everyone. Have a great day and thank you.
Happy recruiting. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Collective Voice. If you or someone you know is interested in a transcript of this podcast or other topics impacting technical recruiting, please visit resources.etechie.com today.